It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It is my honor to be able to throw Donald Trump over at the top in the delegate count tonight with 89 delegates. Congratulations, Dad. We love you.
Sandy Rios with you, coming to you live from the RNC in Cleveland. That was Donald Trump Jr. I think he stole the show last night, actually. Maybe either he did or his sister Tiffany. But he was, it was just, I don't know, how could you not love family? And the New York delegation passed it to Donald Trump Jr. to put his dad over the top. It was very emotional, I think, for him, certainly. In fact, so emotional that Dana Bash pointed it out. Let's listen.
Don Jr., we're live on CNN right now. That was quite a moment. You were able to nominate your father for President of the United States. I see that you're taking a deep breath.
You know, it doesn't get any bigger than that, Dana. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, one of the more surreal moments of my life, other than perhaps the birth of my children. I mean, I've watched him work so hard in this and speak to so many real people who are just feeling left out and left in the dark here in New York and all over the country. And to be able to do that is just, you know, it's historic. It's awesome.
I have to say, I'm not so sure if people can see, but you're tearing up right now.
It's pretty real. So I get to speak later on today, so I got to get my composure back together.
Get yourself together.
It's a surreal moment, and it's a real movement, as I said in there. It's not a campaign. It never was. We're not politicians. He's a real person who's gotten stuff done, who's had a track record of success and accomplishment. And he wants to bring that to this country. And he's going to do that. Everyone talks about it in theory. He's actually done these things.
Well, again, that's Donald Trump Jr. And, you know, it's always moving. When politicians have great families, I personally love that. Whether it's, you know, the Bush family with all their generations and all their grandchildren sitting on a bed, or Mitt Romney with all of his kids standing behind him and his wife, who is stellar, speaking out. It's just something wonderful. And so we enjoyed that last night. I'll speak for myself. I enjoyed it. I think it was pretty surprising. Tiffany Trump, who we haven't really heard from. Tiffany is the baby. Well, no, she's not. They've got a younger son. But of the older kids, she's the youngest. Does that make sense? Of the older kids, she's the youngest. She just graduated from college. So what is she, 21, 22? And yet when she spoke last night, this is what she sounded like. Tiffany Trump, cut 5.
My dad is a natural-born encourager. The last person who will ever tell you to lower your sights or give up your dream. I always look forward to introducing him to my friends, especially the ones with preconceived notions, because they meet a man with natural charm and no facade. In person, my father is so friendly, so considerate, so funny, and so real. My friends walk away with a glimpse of all that he is and all that he means to me. Of the strong, protective, kind, endearing man I am so proud to call my father.
All right, so that's the first part of Tiffany Trump. She talked about this is the first time she's ever given a speech, maybe except in class, and I'm thinking, well, you know, that's pretty amazing. You're standing on the stage and millions of people, even internationally, are watching, and she was very composed. You know, I always feel that whether it's good kids or bad kids, if you have one bad kid, that really doesn't necessarily speak to your parenting. But if all your kids are bad, it's probably doesn't speak very well of you. I feel the same way about good kids. If you have one good kid, you might just be lucky. But if you've got a lineup of really hardworking, well-spoken, disciplined children, that says something about your parenting. That's my personal theory. I've never done a study on it, but I think that's true. Let's go back with Don Jr. because he said so many good things last night. And let's go back and hear. He not only talked about his father, but he talked about substance as well. Let's listen to cut 2.
I know that when someone tells him that something is impossible, that's what triggers him into action. When people told him it was impossible for a boy from Queens to go to Manhattan and take on developers in the big city, rather than give up, he changed the skyline of New York. I've seen it time and time again, that look in his eyes when someone says it can't be done. I saw that look a little over a year ago when he was told he couldn't possibly succeed in politics. Yes, he did. For my father, impossible is just the starting point.
Well, we certainly see that that's true, and his kids are certainly proud of him. I have asked somebody to join me this morning who has been around politics for a very long time. In fact, he's a good friend, and I'm actually such a good friend, I'm handing him a cough drop, because it's too early to talk, isn't it, George?
Almost, but I'm sort of wearing out my voice, hollering and yelling and doing my part down on the floor of the convention.
Yeah, are you part of the Virginia delegation or Florida?
Yes, I'm Richard Viguerie's guest, so I'm part of the Virginia delegation.
George, by the way, just so you know, is the editor-in-chief of what's called Conservative HQ. You hear me talk about them all the time. I refer to George's stuff all the time because he really is a great writer. He has so much insight. George, how many conventions have you been through?
This is my 10th.
This is your 10th?
The first one was in 1976, and I skipped the Romney convention, but I'm back.
Yeah. Well, so as you look at all these 10 that you've experienced and covered, at least even if you weren't, is there anything different about this to you that stands out?
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me about this, and I think this is really important, is that this is not a politician's convention. Donald Trump has a communication strategy, which is to build his brand around being an outsider. And he's brought outsiders to speak at this convention. And so, you know, frankly, the politicians that have been up there, I mean, some of whom have spoken well and said some important things, are secondary to the Pat Smiths, to the Donald Trump Juniors, to the Oz and Tig.
The Benghazi survivors.
Yeah, this is the Outsiders Convention, and this is quite honestly the first time that I have seen that in the 10 conventions I've attended. They're usually a long laundry list of, obscure congressmen and governors who are up for re-election and need a boost in the polls up there on the stage. And this time it is the real people of America up there speaking, and I think that is groundbreaking.
I do too, George. I talked about this yesterday after the first night. I was just blown away. I was mad at myself because I couldn't stay awake. I wanted to see everything, to the end. I missed the last part. I missed the last part last night too, watching. But I was very grateful that the Bushes were not there. I was grateful that Mitt Romney was not there. I was grateful that they were not on the platform. And instead, we were hearing from Patricia Smith. From the underwear model, the Calvin Klein underwear model, that was stunning. I haven't even spoken about that on the air. He talks about his faith in Christ. Yep. He's obviously, a changed guy, and how he came. He's an Italian, I think, Italian-born. Mm-hmm. Spoke passionately about life and what really matters. I mean, this was compelling. And, George, you were there, right?
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah.
I was watching CNN because, actually, they did a great job of covering it Monday night. Mm-hmm. They were panning the crowd, and people were really so emotional and so moved especially by Patricia Smith, but not just her. But did you feel that on the floor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was amazing. I mean, the number of people who were really choked up during some of these speeches. And it wasn't just one emotion. It was person after person after person who is explaining the disaster in their lives that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have made.
Yeah, parents who lost kids to illegal immigrant criminals who have been, you know, let go from jail, and just a real consequences of these policies.
Exactly.
It was very moving. All right, well, let's move ahead to last night, because last night really was contrast, because we started it out with just the very types of Republican establishment that we fight on Capitol Hill all the time.
I referred to that as all the people that voters hate.
Well, really, you know, I'm curious, because when Paul Ryan spoke last night, and by the way, I didn't see this until this morning, he actually used the wrong end of the gavel. He was tapping on the podium with the handle instead of the button. What was that all about?
That's what they do. That's what they do in the House. That's sort of the preamble to giving it a good whack with the head.
It looked like a mistake, you know. It looked like he didn't know which end was which. That's what it looked like on television.
He doesn't know which end is up, but that was. I mean, I didn't interpret it that way. I've seen him do it on the podium at the.
Well, substantively, I listened to his. I tried to listen to his speech. Mm-hmm. But, George, it was like wonkery. It was like policy wonkery, which doesn't, at least on television, certainly didn't work. Did it work in the stadium?
No, nobody was paying attention. I mean, as soon as Ryan got up there, everybody, you know, it was like the commercial at a football game. Everybody went for a beer or, in this case, a cup of coffee.
By contrast, of course, Kevin McCarthy spoke, kind of the same thing.
I'm assuming
you might have heard some things I did not hear. I didn't. It was just a line. Oh, listen, the other thing that looked so funny to me, I'm such a cynic. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, I'm a cynic. When they paraded the 10 new Republican senators up there, and one of them spoke, and Joni Ernst, you know, awkwardly kept waving like a cheerleader, like, whoa, whoa. It was a very odd moment. Mitch McConnell was behind the podium. And I thought, this is, you and I both know that for the most part, all 10 of those were put in place by Mitch McConnell and the establishment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
nothing to really cheer about there.
No. And again, you know, it's 10 guys who were seen by most conservatives as sellouts.
Exactly.
And so, you know, they're, to the extent that they get any airtime, it's alienating voters that Trump needs to win.
Yeah. It was an interesting, it was a very dull. They did it dully, and it was dull.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's what the convention would be.
They're dull.
They are dull, because by contrast with the speakers on Monday night, these were the wonks talking about the Republican Party. You know, nobody wants to really. We're tired. This is serious business. We don't want politicians talking politician talk. Yep. But that's what they did, except for Chris Christie.
Christie, I thought that he. Did well for Trump. I thought he did well for defeating Hillary Clinton. His speech was not just informative, but it was entertaining somewhat. You know, that doesn't mitigate the fact that Chris Christie is no conservative, and I certainly wouldn't want him for president or vice president.
Or attorney general.
Yeah, or definitely for attorney general. He did, you know, I mean, he held people's attention, and he drove home a point that really somewhat more emotionally had been made the night before, in my opinion.
Yeah. Hey, let's listen a little bit, because we have it's cut eight, Jeff. Let's listen to Chris Christie, just a minute of him last night.
Tonight, as a former federal prosecutor, I welcome the opportunity to hold Hillary Rodham Clinton accountable for her performance and her character. Hillary Clinton, as a failure for ruining Libya and creating a nest for terrorist activity by ISIS, answer me now, is she guilty or not guilty? As an awful judge of the character of a dictator and butcher in the Middle East, is she guilty or not guilty? As a coddler of the brutal Castro brothers and betrayer of the family of fallen state trooper Werner Foster and his family, is she guilty or not guilty?
Guilty!
Let's face the facts. Hillary Clinton cared more about protecting her own secrets than she cared about protecting America's secrets.
That was Chris Christie, and they're shouting, you know, lock her up. And he went through a whole series of things in foreign policy that she had done, and he asked, is she guilty or not guilty? And, of course, this really, even though it's theater, political theater, it's true.
Yeah, I the think things that's that where he my said voice are cracked true. Last night.
Okay, so you were the locker up. You know, honestly, and you know, Michael Mukasey, former attorney general, made the strongest case against her from a high position of law enforcement expertise. He indicted her last night on that stage.
Yeah, he did a good job. Although, again, it's, you know, a lot of that stuff has been rehashed in the editorial pages and in the news so many times that it's almost not news anymore.
You know what, George, though? I felt it was clearer last night. Mm-hmm. You see, because they have a way of couching it and they have so many words and they talk about email. They really narrowed it down in focus and made it quite clear last night. And I was thinking Dinesh D'Souza's movie on Hillary Clinton is coming out this Friday. And we saw the premiere Sunday night, and the timing is perfect because it also lays out in user-friendly ways that people can understand the crimes and the offenses that she and her husband have committed.
Yeah, well, in that movie is exactly why she wants to overturn Citizens United, because if she got her way, she'd be able to censor that movie and stop it from being run.
George, we only have a couple of minutes left, but the one thing that there's a lot of discussion there has been about the rules and the platform. And I talked to David Barton yesterday. He feels the platform is excellent. But on the rules, in fact, I'm happy to hear you talk about that too, but on the rules, which is what I really want to talk to you about, the spin this morning, even on Fox again, it was yesterday also, that it's Cruz supporters who are trying to peel delegates away from having to free them up so they can vote for Cruz. That's basically how they're saying that this fight is all about freeing delegates to vote for Cruz right now, and that's pretty much what this rules fight was all about. But that's not really true, is it?
No. In fact, I have an article explaining it up on conservativehq.com this morning. But there's really two issues going on here. One was the unbinding the delegates, which it had its own constituency, but the more important rules fight was over reforming the RNC, making it more transparent, pushing more control back down to the states and the grassroots, and defeating some new rules that Rince Priebus has proposed that would essentially make the chairman of the RNC almost a dictator. He could appoint people to committees without having to reveal their names and contact information.
Did that pass?
Yeah. And so Morton Blackwell has been fighting this stuff for years. And it really, I mean, the party has gotten less and less Democratic, small d, over the last 20 years. And this became a particularly acute problem after the 2012 convention, when Romney's people put in a lot of unfriendly to the grassroots rules. Morton's been trying to get this stuff turned around for at least the last 4 years, if not longer. And so his effort was totally separate from the unbind the delegates thing. They tried to piggyback onto the support that he had built for a roll call vote on the rules. And in a case of strange bedfellows, you had what in essence were the Never Trump people and the Trump people combining to defeat reform of the RNC and in essence make Priebus a dictator.
Because as I understand it, the leaders of the RNC were able to convince the Trump people that it was all about unseating him when it was all of these things that you talked about.
Exactly.
So it was a marriage of not very worthy goals, but it happened. They really actually succeeded. And so, but you hear the music, George. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, you think there's going to be unity, or were there so many bad things that took place in that interaction that there won't be?
Well, there's some Never Trump people that are going to be Never Trump forever. Ted Cruz is not one of them. I don't see him encouraging this in the least.
Yeah. I think. But he's getting blamed for it.
Of course he's getting blamed for it, because the bottom line really is that you've got a group of people who, you know, they want to do things their way, and
And a
they're never for Trump. They're never going to be for
and
Trump.
And a group of people who are trying to, Morton Blackwell and Ken Cuccinelli and Mike Lee and others trying to get this thing right. I know the fight will go on. George Rassling, by the way, we'll put your article up on our Facebook page from Conservative HQ explaining.
Millions of people are asking the question, what has happened to America? Is there hope? What will our children and grandchildren face in years to come? There is no doubt that religious liberties for all men are under attack by those who want to completely eradicate God from our history and our future. On July 30th, we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our national motto, In God We Trust. This motto has been inscribed on monuments and on our coins. It's been boldly proclaimed in speeches from Presidents Lincoln, Kennedy, and Reagan. Our national motto is a reminder to Americans everywhere that there is hope for our future. Go to ingodwetrust.com to join the movement to restore hope across our nation. Get informed, get excited, and get your In God We Trust decal today. Say it, display it, and claim it. Again, that's ingodwetrust.com.
With today's Faith to Action commentary, here's Janet Porter.
Scientist Lord Kelvin formulated the second law of thermodynamics, which tells us that a system will always go from order to disorder unless there's a plan or outside intelligence to organize it. Even evolutionists like Isaac Asimov agree, stating everything becomes a mess, deteriorates, breaks down, wears out, all by itself. Yet those who support the theory of evolution would have us believe that things become more organized and complex when left to themselves. Kelvin, the author of the second law of thermodynamics, said, "Overwhelming, strong proofs of intelligent and benevolent design lie around us. The atheistic idea is so nonsensical that I cannot put it into words."
Visit F2A.org for more commentaries and action steps, along with news, links, and much more for your state. Go to F2A.org.
Hello, Americans. From the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu.
It's a big mess, folks. It's a great big mess. I'm talking about the Republican National Convention, delegates fighting delegates, never Trump versus always Trump. Instead of trying to unify the warring factions, the RNC is trying to manipulate press coverage. In the aftermath of Monday's nasty floor fight, the RNC ordered the Secret Service and Cleveland police to remove reporters from the convention floor. Among those hauled away were some of my Fox News colleagues. The RNC declined to say why they stopped reporters from doing their jobs. Now, you would expect that kind of thuggish behavior from Democrats, but certainly not from Republicans. That being said, the GOP and the Trump campaign need to knock it off and figure out how they can make this shotgun wedding work. Otherwise, Hillary Clinton's going to be putting her hand on the Bible in January. From Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Approximately 2 o'clock today, there was a drive-by shooting down on First Street. Our officers responded to the area. As they arrived, the suspect vehicle took off. There was a vehicle chase that ended up at about 22nd and Haskell. As Captain Melton was arriving, the suspects bailed from the vehicle and opened fire, striking Captain Melton and fatally wounding him.
2:15, we got a notification of an officer involved in a shooting, and the patient arrived at 2:22. The crew had been doing CPR as he didn't have any blood pressure or heart rate at the time of arrival. We continued the resuscitative efforts. Despite our best efforts, the officer was pronounced at 2:55.
Well, that's something I don't know if you've heard, but that happened in Kansas City just last night. Another officer killed in his car. We have had, as far as I know, unless I've just missed it, relative peace so far here at this convention. I've seen the protesters, and they look like they're ready to cause trouble, but they, I don't think, have been able to do that. The CARE is passing out Islamophobia pills. That's one thing they're doing. Have you taken one of those Hans von Spakovsky, one of those Islamophobia pills?
I have not, because there's really no such phenomena that I've observed in the United States. All I've seen are people seriously concerned about a threat, which is Islamic Jihad.
I was just thinking, if that pill could, you know, make you bulletproof against beheading or, you know, a terrorist attack, maybe we'd take one of those pills. I don't know, we wouldn't have that problem anymore, but anyway. But so there are people that are outside. We walked past one yesterday who said, his T-shirt said, "Justice is coming." My husband said, "It sure is. Justice is coming." That's right. So, I mean, but there, you know, there are some dangerous people outside the gates. Hans von Spakovsky is my guest. And, of course, you know him. He's been my guest frequently. He's one of my favorites. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's a former lawyer with the Justice Department. In fact, out of that experience, wrote a book called Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department. Hans, do you know anything about, I'm putting you on the spot here because I don't know, I have not seen too much about successful protesting outside yet. Have you?
No, I haven't. I mean, the police presence here has been great. The officers that I've seen have been just so professional in what they're doing. And so far, they've kept it tamped down so it hasn't erupted into violence.
What amazes me, this, I'm saying it again, my third day here, they've come from all over the country.
Yeah.
Just walked right into it, knowing what they know. I mean, we'd heard earlier reports that some police departments had decided they weren't going to go. They'd changed, they're standing down. They didn't want to, it was too dangerous. And then we've got these others who said, we're coming.
Right.
We're going to be there.
Right.
We're going to protect freedom. I just think that's so impressive, Hans.
No, it is, and you can tell this is a different crowd, because I've seen folks going up to these officers and just thanking them for being here, and you know, they don't have to worry about the kind of taunts and other things they've been hearing at, for example, Black Lives Matters protests.
Yeah. I did read an article last night that I believe it was in USA Today about a number of protests that were planned yesterday, and it itemized some groups I'd never heard of, but they're, you know, leftist groups, and they were planning all these protests, and like in one particular protest on a bridge, they said nobody showed up. You know, they had been advertising, and they said thousands were going to come, and nobody came. So that surprises me. I actually expected there to be, of course, this is Wednesday. All kinds of things can happen.
Well, yeah, I do have to admit, I did walk by one, I guess it was a protest yesterday, in which there seemed to be more media and reporters than there were actually
there. That's actually another part, what the U.S., that's the other thing the article said. I think this is a Cleveland paper, actually, now that I said that. So that's good news, and I think the lesson from that to me is, look, we just show strength. Just show strength. Just establish law and order and say, no. And they back down.
Right. Yeah. No. And you know, the biggest problem we've had is, you know, you're talking about justice before, is the U.S. Department of Justice and how badly it's been run, how politicized it's become. And it has not stepped in when it should have, just starting from the very first year of the administration when it refused to go after the new Black Panther Party for intimidating voters in Philadelphia.
Well, didn't our mutual friend Christian Adams actually in his book show an event where Hillary Clinton and President Barack Obama were on the stage with the leadership of the new Black Panthers at some big event, you know, celebrating, not just, they were just in the audience, they were on the stage with them,
with Hillary
Clinton and President Barack Obama.
Yeah, and this is one of the worst hate groups in the country. It's anti-Semitic, it's racist, it's anti-white. If a Republican had been on stage with an organization like that, there would have been, excuse my language, hell to pay, especially in the media, and nobody pays any attention to that.
Yeah. Well, so that brings us back to last night.
Right.
The lineup on the stage, the theme was supposed to be Put America Back to Work Again, but it seems to me the theme that came across to me was the indictment of Hillary Clinton in no uncertain terms, in actually clearer terms than than I think have been happening in news reports for weeks. I think people are still kind of, they know something's not right, but if you push them against the wall, they'd say, oh, it's something about her email. I don't think they're real clear. But if they watched last night, they're pretty clear, don't you think?
Yeah, Governor Christie did a great job of doing that. And, of course, people should remember he's a former United States attorney. So he's got the experience to do that. Look, one of the speeches last night that was very short and that folks have not paid a lot of attention to is that of the former Attorney General, Michael Mukasey. And the reason that's important is that people should recall, he was Attorney General during the Bush administration, but he was praised by both sides of the political aisle. You know, he's a former federal judge. People have a lot of respect for him. And, I mean, he just went through and talked about how there was no question that she had broken federal law with regard to the email scandal, and that his best line was that if she takes the oath to be president, it'll be the first time in American history where someone who's already broken that oath is retaking it.
Yeah, right. He was very, very calm, very clear. You know, I was watching CNN last night, their coverage. So when Mukasey finished and they went back to the desk, it was Jake Tapper and Wolf Blitzer. And I was amazed. Jake Tapper said, well, that's Michael Mukasey, and he's a pretty trustworthy source, and he kind of laid it out there. And, I mean, they were silenced. I mean, I saw, now, of course, I'm extrapolating my own view here, but I saw Wolf Blitzer's eyes dance a little bit, like, oh, how do we get out of this one? But it was, Jake was actually pretty measured and pretty affirming about what Mukasey said, as much as he could be on CNN. So I don't know, Hans. And then I thought when Christie led that chant last night, you know, guilty. Is she guilty or not? And people yelled guilty. It was just pretty amazing.
Well, I'll tell you something that I've mentioned. I think I probably mentioned this before, but for those who wonder about that issue, all they need to do is look back at her own husband's presidential administration. On his last day in office, Bill Clinton gave a pardon to John Deutsch. John Deutsch, remember, was the head of the CIA. And you know why he was given a pardon? He was about to enter a plea deal with the U.S. Justice Department for keeping classified materials on his unsecured home computer.
I did not know that.
Does that sound familiar?
Wait, you know what? You need to repeat that. I seriously, say it again and flesh it out a little, even so people can remember.
John Deutsch was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency under Bill Clinton. It was discovered by folks at the CIA, and there's an Inspector General report about this, that he had been taking home classified materials, classified documents, and was keeping them on his home computer, which was an unsecured computer. Also, he was apparently keeping him on a laptop, which was also unsecured.
And he was under investigation for this? Had he been tried and convicted already?
He was about to be charged by the Justice Department. That his lawyers apparently had negotiated a plea deal, and right before he was going to accept the plea deal, the president gives him a pardon. So that Justice Department clearly believed that you could charge and convict someone for keeping classified materials on an unsecured home computer, which is the exact same situation we have with Hillary Clinton.
With his wife. But she, and of course she says everybody does it. She made the case that people do it and everybody knew about it. It's no big deal. And
That's just not true. And Deutsch is a great example of people who keep classified materials in unsecure locations like that. They get charged, convicted, and they can go to jail.
And it's not accidental. When you have a top secret clearance, you know full well.
That's right.
It's not, oops, I didn't mean to do that. You know full well your career, your future, and maybe even your freedom is at stake if you breach that. Everybody right. knows that it works in security.
Yeah, of course they do. We all knew that working at the Justice Department.
Yeah. All right. Well, Hans, I'd like to play some clips from last night and just get your response. Well, first of all, let me just ask you, we're going to take a break here. Actually, Jeff, why don't you hold the break for about 5 minutes? There were a lot of speakers last night, and I'd just be curious to know what you thought. There were a lot of Republican establishment types on that stage. Hans, I know you're from Heritage, so you can plead the fifth on these political things, but what were your thoughts about that compared with Monday night?
I, just as an outside observer, I have to say that I think the people that have had the most effect in terms of the speakers have been the unknowns, the people who are not the elected officials. You know, particularly the night before, when you had the mother of the SEAL Team 6 member who'd been
killed.
Sean
Smith. Yeah. Patricia Smith.
When you had survivors of Benghazi come in, when you had family members come in who were victims of crimes committed by illegal aliens, yet nobody knew who they were, with some exceptions, before they came up on stage. But, boy, you could see the audience getting very emotional. People were crying over what they were saying. And I think that really, that was a way of bringing home to the audience, to the American people, how important the issue is of our national security, who's running our foreign policy, who's running our military and protecting our military personnel. And that means whoever they choose to be in the White House starting in January of next year is vital to the future of the country.
Even Lieutenant General Flynn in his speech, I guess, went off script and said, yes, Hillary should be in jail. You know, I mean, that was pretty incredible. I mean, that's powerful language. We have the audience yelling, lock her up. I mean, I recognize that, you know, when you go to political gatherings, this is a part of it I don't really like, to be honest with you.
Right.
These chants and silly things that people, boo, you know, hiss, I don't know. That whole scene is not mine, never has been. But this was, like, organic. These were responses that came out of honest circumstances, not just drumming up emotion. And I thought it was a pretty amazing. By contrast, last night you had the establishment coming out on the stage. And I don't think they played very well in the audience. I don't know what your take was on that.
No, I heard certain boos at points throughout the audience when some of the elected officials were up there. You certainly didn't hear that with all those other folks we were talking about, including, by the way, the guy last night, I forget his name, who is the head of the Wrestling Association.
Yes, I just heard a little tiny bit of that this morning. I think I mentioned with Georgia before you joined us that I can't stay awake that late because we have to get up so early.
Right.
So I miss the latter portions every night, but I saw a little clip of it this morning.
But, you know, he had this one line where he's talking about the American people want somebody who is actually proud to be an American.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, you know, I think after 8 years of Barack Obama, most people realize that he's actually not proud to be an American. He seems to be embarrassed about an American. He's always apologizing for things that America has done. And again, whatever choice folks make, I think they actually want somebody in the White House like Ronald Reagan, who was unabashedly a patriot and proud of this great country.
Well, that's something that Donald Trump certainly had. That is certainly something he has in common with Ronald Reagan. That positive, you know, make America great again. This is a great country. He certainly does share that. He may have a different style. Ronald Reagan was more gracious, no question about it, although he knew how to fight too. But they share that positive vision. And I think it's kind of like a water on a dry and thirsty land.
Yes, I think that's actually a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So, Hans, we've talked about your background before, but I don't think people would remember that because you and I talk about, you know, elections, law, and illegal immigration and all these things all the time because that's what you write about, a lot of that, what's going on at the Justice Department. But your own personal history is very interesting. And in fact, I'll just start with a real – it's Hans von Spakovsky. Does von – that your lineage is somebody who was like a count or something, right?
Yeah, my most people have a hard time believing this because I'm still fairly young, but my father actually was half Russian, half Lithuanian. He was born in St. Petersburg, Russia, back before the communists took over. My great-grandmother was a Russian princess, and my father actually fought in the Russian Revolution as part of the White Army against the communist takeover. And when the communists took over, he, thank goodness, managed to escape, only member of his family to get out of Russia and make it to the West.
We have to come back with that. Can you stay with me a few
more
minutes? Okay,
sure.
Let's go back to that, because the reason I'm bringing it up this morning is just perspective.
Right.
You bring to this table, to this event, a perspective. I'd like to say, think I have that perspective too, because of my own my own roots, but yours are closer to people that were not free and fought for freedom. So let's talk about that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. My guest is Hans von Spakovsky. It's yes, sir. We'll be right back. Oh, Your Honor, what shall I say? All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. Be right back.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there is so much uncertainty about what to do and how to do it when it comes to this incredible responsibility to be a good steward of what God's entrusted us with. Whether it's a lot or a little, it's irrelevant. But it's a very scary prospect today in this day of volatility.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia every weekday morning from 8 until 10 Central and Saturday from 10 to 11 on AFR Talk.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's now just a question of time. Specifically, when will President Obama pardon Hillary Clinton? That question was the inevitable takeaway from New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's powerful indictment, literally, of the former Secretary of State in his address to the GOP convention last night. The one-time federal prosecutor methodically laid out the litany of lies, malfeasance, and other criminal activities with which Mrs. Clinton could and should be charged. The crowd found her guilty again and again. Naturally, the most politicized Justice Department ever won't prosecute the incipient Democratic presidential nominee, but Governor Christie showed how, all other things being equal, Hillary will be tried and convicted in the court of public opinion. The only possible way out is for President Obama to pardon her preemptively and soon. It may not change the ultimate verdict, but it would commute Hillary's sentence. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're going to elect a president who will work with everyone to pass legislation that will make our country great again. A president who will give us a tax code that will free the American economy and end special loopholes for the wealthy. A president who will give us an immigration law that protects American citizens and gives them jobs.
A president who will repeal and replace Obamacare without leaving our most vulnerable citizens without health care, and who will do it without destroying Medicare for seniors, as Hillary Clinton has proposed. A president who knows we can't simply delete our problems, but that we have to tackle them head on.
Sandy Rios with you, and that was, of course, Donald Trump Jr. Many people are saying, well, he should run. And if he wanted to, I think he could and be very successful. He's the one whose face, when all of those stories were being told by citizens like Patricia Smith Monday night, the camera panned to him, and I could just see he was just so moved like everyone else. And he understands, and it just makes me think that regardless of what you think about Donald Trump, there's some serious discussions in their house about what's going on in the country, and it's worthy of our respect. Hans von Spakovsky is my guest, and of course he's the senior legal fellow at Heritage, good friend, and a man who writes about truth and justice from a deep personal passion because of his own family history. And Hans, we were just talking about the fact that your father was one of the last people to get out. He was born in St. Petersburg, you said?
Yeah, that's right.
Before the Russian Revolution. And I was sharing with you off the mic that Russia and its revolution is something I made myself an expert, not an expert, a layperson, whatever. Right. I just had a fascination with it. My first daughter was named Sasha because I had such a love for Russian history. I almost named my son Nicholas, and I've been to Russia and on. So all that being said, I don't have your history. Your dad was actually there. So when you were growing up, there must have been a lot of discussions about what it meant to be free and what it meant not to be free.
Well, in particular, because my mother was German, and she grew up in Nazi Germany. And my parents immigrated here in 1951. They felt so fortunate to get to the United States. And, look, I grew up in Alabama, North Alabama. And, you know, during the day, I was just a regular American kid, you know, playing ball and having fun with the neighborhood kids. But when I would go home at night around the dinner table, I'd hear all kinds of stories from my parents about what it was like in living in dictatorships, where the secret police, which my father had to deal with in Russia, what that was like. And I tell you, I, at a very early age, had a terrific appreciation for how lucky I was to be living in this great country, in a country that was free, where we didn't have a secret police who could knock on your door in the middle of the night and take you away. Although we've seen people trying to imitate that, for example, in the John Doe investigations in Wisconsin.
This is the part, you know, history repeats itself, and because of our knowledge of those things. You know, like the re-education camps in Russia, where I was just talking with Dinesh D'Souza yesterday about how that's going to air on Friday, by the way, for those of you listening, about how they arrested him for giving more than he should have to Wendy Long, his friend, in a Senate campaign, which is not really the punishment for that violation of a rule was just amazing. But so it's injustice, and we're beginning to see things like what we know happened in Russia, Mother Russia. Well, not Mother Russia. It was post-Mother Russia, I guess. But Hans, the movie Dr. Zhivago, you and I spoke briefly off the air about that. That movie had a great impact on me, too, because, again, by the time I got there, I already knew a lot about Russia. But the one scene that really, really impacted me is when Yuri, the doctor, comes back from Siberia or from wherever he was. He was, separated from his family, and he's out doing medical work in the front lines of the war. And he comes back to the city, into Moscow, and he trudges across, the square, back to his beautiful home, which is multiple floors, right downtown in, I guess it would have been St. Petersburg at the time, Moscow, I'm not sure. And he, all of a sudden, he starts to knock at the door, and the door bursts open, and it's hundreds of Russians in drab, revolutionary, the hats and... And they say to him, "Hello, comrade, your home has been confiscated. This is block number 122, and your family is designated now to the second floor they had one bedroom." So he goes up the stairs, and all of these people are strangers in his home, are everywhere. And he goes up to the room where his family lives, and they're freezing because they can't even, they're tearing up furniture to burn in the fireplace just to stay warm. And it's all for the good of the it's for the good of everyone, comrade, that, you know, your home is now not your home. And eventually then they all come into the bedroom, start taking even the family things.
Right.
That's very impactful. And you have a personal connection with that movie.
So well, in fact, the Dr. Vago, you know, is based on a book written by the Russian author Pasternak. And my great-grandmother actually knew Pasternak, and my father met him when he was just a small boy. And actually, my grandmother's maiden name, Pasternak put it in the book as the name of, I think a bookseller, like in the beginning of the book.
And you said that movie's hard for you to watch.
It is, because it reminds me too much of my father's life.
So, Hans, with that, there's a lot to say about that. But as we watch the process, like some people are, I've seen commentators on mostly hostile media, hostile to the Republicans, criticize this process and talk about arguments on the floor and all of that. This actually is very healthy democracy right now, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the way democracy is supposed to work. But instead, we have people on the left. I mean, this is not directly related to what's going on here today. But look, we have people on the left right now, senators in the U.S. Senate and others saying that, for example, people who have what they consider to be the wrong view on an unproven scientific theory, climate change, that they should be investigated and prosecuted by the government. I mean, that is the kind of thing that happened in the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin. And they are unapologetic about it. Sheldon Whitehouse, you know, the senator from Rhode Island, he actually published a piece about a week and a half ago in the Columbia Journalism Review saying that those who publish op-eds like me that question climate change, that responsible editorial boards should not be publishing what we say. So he was encouraging censorship.
Which is what the Soviets did. I mean, that's why Alexander Solzhenitsyn was banished and other intellectuals to the gulag, because they had wrong thinking. And they had to be, and it was called mental illness, labeled as that, you know. And that's why they went to re-education camps. And, see, but we have a whole generation that doesn't really understand that, Hans. And that's why we have to remind them. We've got to tell them these stories so that they understand what's happening. We are at the beginnings of an attempt through political correctness, through wrong thinking, through using the wrong words, whether it's, you know, what we say about Islam, to what we say about homosexuality and gay marriage. We are moving into this era of control by shaming, which is the precursor to control by actual punishment, loss of jobs, and
harassment,
banishment.
Right, harassment and intimidation. And actually, you know, we've seen the new social media, which is a great information tool. You know, we now see that being used in a bad way to harass and intimidate those who some people think have the wrong views about all of these issues. That's not the way things are supposed to work in our democracy.
And that's why we fight. That's why you and I fight. That's why so many of our friends, we fight, because we're over our dead bodies. Will we move into that Soviet era in this country? Do you find yourself optimistic right now? There's so little of it, you see. I'm just wondering, do you feel any optimism?
I do feel a bit optimistic, although I got to tell you, and I never thought I would ever say this, but, you know, I've got three children about college age, and I really worry that they are not going to have the same thing that all parents really now for generations have had in this country, which they've always expected their kids would do better than them. And I really worry about where we're going, not just from a public safety, national security standpoint with this terrorism war, but also, look, we're on the road to bankruptcy and economic ruin unless we get our federal budget and our debt under control.
Among so many other things. All right. So Hans von Spakovsky, anything that Hans writes is trustworthy. It's good stuff. And Daily Signal, PJ Media, you're published everywhere.
Right? Yeah, also Conservative Review.
Conservative Review. So Hans von Spakovsky, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Annie. It's great to see you.
All right. So day two of the convention live here in Cleveland, and we'll be back tomorrow. So hope you'll tune in. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.